Welcome to All the Bits, a fake radio show about board games, the community, and all the lovely, lovely bits. All the Bits is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network and is sponsored by Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. Without further ado, here are your hosts, Sean and Michelle.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 68.
I took a shower during that pause. In this episode's bits, we'll talk about Tekenehu, Obelisk of the Sun, Rare Roses, Project L, not AL, Squire for Hire, and a fun escape room adventure, question mark, maybe, I don't know. We'll discuss the BGG threat. Have you become jaded over time? Spoiler alert, yes, we have, and we'll get up to our usual antics of asking pointless questions, guessing games, and drooling over bits. Oh, and I will plug the coupon code ATB-TAKE5OFF100, which will take $5 off your order if it's over $100 at Board Game Bliss. One use per customer, because we're sponsored, y'all.
Legit. We legit.
Too legit to quit?
Too legit to quit. I was going to do that, but it's too easy. I was trying to think of a different word that rhymed with legit, but I...
No,
quit. Legit.
Quit. Quit is definitely the thing. On that note, goodbye, y'all!
Yeah.
So,
and how, Sean, you have not been playing games, I hear.
No, I mean, you know, this is like start of the school year, start of everything, slash, you know, being in... lockdown. And it's funny too, because I've played like a few games with my wife, basically, but she has like, she has even been like, Sean, do you, because like pregnancy has done something weird to her and she's actually wanted to play games, and
what?
She'll like ask me and she'll be like, Sean, do you want to play games? And I'll be like, I'm so tired, no. Or we'll like start playing something and then like 5 minutes in or 10 minutes in, I'll be like, okay, I'm done, I'm just going to bed right now. And it's been like that like quite a few times, because in the past it's always, oh, I'm gonna teach you a new game, and then like I'll be teaching a turn, and like, you know, 5 minutes into the teach, she's like, no, we're done, goodbye. And now I'm like, now I'm just like, yeah, it's been a wreck. It's been like, you know, you would think you would be able to game a ton being like trapped inside, preparing for a new baby to come. And, you know, you think you'd have all the time in the world, but no. So
I do find some evenings when I'm tired, if I actually think about the whole process of board gaming, I'm like, oh, I'm too tired. Because you think about, okay, I got to pick a game, and then, like, my games are in the basement. This sounds
you got to go down all those stairs
and pick up the box, and then you got to do setup. And, you know, a lot of the time, you know, you're reviewing the rules, at least, right?
Yeah.
You got to do that, and, oh, yeah. I still game a lot, but yeah, sometimes I just like don't think about the process, because if I do, then I just don't feel like gaming.
It can
be a lot of work.
It is. It can be. One thing I've noticed is that like I have like a cutoff where it's like if I don't, and I've noticed that now that I don't really have game nights anymore, because I'm like this even with online play. Like I need to start at a certain time and then I will be okay. But if it's like, you know, because like if I play a game with my wife, we can't obviously do it until our daughter is sleeping and we're sure she's like, you know, done for the night. So by that time it's usually like gonna be like 8 o'clock, and I'm usually like, no, it's not happening. Whereas like a game night, you know, I would usually start a game night like 6:30, 7, and I'd be able to play till like 12 or whatever, and be totally fine. Whereas now I can't do that. And if like someone was like, and it's happened like a few times with online game nights where it's like, oh, we're gonna start like 8 o'clock, and I'm like, nope, you've missed my cutoff, man, I'm done.
You've missed the window. Mine's about 9:30. Once 9:30 hits, I'm like, yeah, that's just
I can't do
and
that.
As you've seen, learning brass at 11 p.m. yeah, is not fair. A good choice, a life choice for me.
That's fair.
It's just not a good choice.
Hey, speaking of not good choices, I have a question for you. No, it's not a question. We're just going back to our Ask Me Anything bit. which this is wherein we ask each other useless questions about this beautiful hobby. And I'm just going back to the good old BGG random game thing.
Oh, Sean.
Okay. Yeah, sure you do. I bet you do. All right. This is going to be a gooder.
Is it?
Picnic Treasure Hunt came out in 1971. There is no designer. No, and it's by Milton Bradley. For two to four players game. Okay, let's go to the next one.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's go to the next. Oh yes, this is where I just basically asked Michelle. Asked Michelle if she wants to burn, play or buy a game from BGG using the random game feature.
Have I chosen buy yet?
I don't think you have. No, and I've done.
I don't think so.
I've probably
they're
done
pretty,
this. Like
they're pretty bad. Well, it's
just
usually.
You know, it just goes to show how many games are, you know, actually playable out of the 100 million that are on BGG.
There you go.
All right. You ready for your next one?
Of course I am.
Okay, it's gonna be one. This is going to be one you know, guaranteed. You might actually, I don't know, this seems like it's a child's game. Bingo Pongo, which is just published by International Playthings Incorporated. It's bingo meets memory. Everyone gets a bingo card, a bingo game board, and markers. Then the animal cards are placed face down as a standard memory game. When the match is turned up, the cards are not taken. Instead, a marker is placed on the appropriate animal on the player's bingo board. Then, the twist. The two cards are turned face down again, and a monkey figure is placed on one of the cards, so it is blocked for the next player. Dun, dun, dun.
All right. Here's the thing. That monkey figure is so adorable, and he's a cute little banana. So I will be purchasing this game for my daughter Whoa. And I to play.
Hey, at least
and for us to play with a monkey because it's super cute.
Monkeys are pretty. Are
Who doesn't
are
need cute. A cute little monkey figure with a banana?
That's
my little monkey.
That's true. Okay, I'm going to give you one more. One more.
Okay.
I'm having fun with this today.
By the way, Bingo Pongo has a rating of 8.6.
I didn't check how many people were
with one rating.
Okay. Wait, that makes no sense. Oh, wow. Okay. This game came out in 1936. It's called Movie Millions and published by Transogram Games. It's a movie board game where you attempt to put together a cast of stars for one of seven different kinds of movies, various kinds of movies, along with matching it with the correct director. It features the pictures of some of the most famous Hollywood actors and actresses of the times.
I mean, there's part of me that says I want to play it just out of curiosity because it's a representation of the time. Mm-hmm. But I'm not one for movies, celebrity names, all of that. So I'm gonna say we're just gonna put that in the pile and burn it.
So I'm just looking on the BGG comments for this. There's one comment on there, but it does say that Reiner Knizia based his I don't even know what word that is. Apocryphal Fabric der Traum on this masterpiece.
Masterpiece. Woo! That's a strong word, Starmax.
Yep.
From Alberta.
Whoa. Represent.
Whoa.
Probably a listener.
This might show up in our local like auction or marketplace.
And it's probably quite expensive, I would assume, a game from 1936.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, these types of games have not changed since 1936. Looking at them, it looks identical.
I know, right?
Buck
Jones.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, this is great.
That was a good one. All right. Ask me anything, Michelle.
Okay, sorry. I'm like,
I know.
All right, I have a question for you. Sean, you have a limitless budget to build a gaming table. What does it include and how will you bling it out?
What does it include? Hey, okay. Well, it would include, it would have your standard, whatever, raised thing. Now, does this count chairs and chairs as well? Like, is this
sure.
the whole set or just the table?
Whatever you want it to
because I feel like it would have, like, really awesome chairs that have, like, you know, what's that word I'm looking for? that for your back, so you know.
Ergonomic?
Ergonomic, that's the word. So I would sit up straight, which would be nice, and it would have like some sort of slant where, you know, the indent is on the table, so your hands would be able to rest nice and comfortable on it. I really like those tables that have like almost like dice trays built into rails. So you could like roll mm-hmm. your dice, and has like a card stand, and it would have a really nice high quality, like, you know, whatchamacallit, play mat inside too. Other than that, I'm like, I know a lot of people are like super into the LED lights on the inside. I can't imagine that doing anything other than giving me a really bad headache or really annoying me. What else? It would be nice to like figure out a way, like, you know, you have like the legs, although this would annoy me because I'd have to bend down, but like in like the legs of the table could be like a dice tower. So you drop your dice in there and they roll all the way down in some ridiculous thing and come out the legs. But again, after, I feel like after a few games, I would just be annoyed because I'd keep having to bend down to pick up my dice.
Yeah. But you could get like a claw.
Ooh,
a die claw.
My father had one of those growing up.
To pick up all it up.
Yeah. what else? I'm trying to think. I think that would probably, cup holders would definitely a must for me, even though they're pretty standard these days. Yeah, that's kind of it though. I can't think of anything. I would just like a game table. Period. So I don't really care. But yeah.
I think you would need, where you rested your hands, you'd have like a fiddle cup where you would put bits in it.
Oh, so you just like, you build it into the railing where you have, where you can also have like a, different fidgets and stuff. Oh, that's a great idea. I'm going to mark that one down. I do fidget a lot.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm.
That's a good question. I like that one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was hoping you'd come up with something a little bit more creative.
Like the dice tower. Crazy.
Although the die tower.
Yeah, the leg dice
tower leg. That was pretty.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
I just want, I just want a die claw now. Yeah, that's all I want.
That'd be tricky, though, because it would have to be really fine to be able to pick up dice.
Yeah. Hmm. Or maybe
just a robot that does it for
all
you.
Your dice, and then you could just make it a magnet.
No, that would work too. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Or like a magnet gun or a die gun. You could like shoot your dice. Pew, pew.
That's pew. That sounds really safe.
But it'd be like, since we're talking about tables, it would have to be attached to your table.
That's true. That would help with the safety, supposedly. All right.
Cool.
Okay.
Well, there you go. What's next, Sean?
Do 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 do
do. That actually hurts my throat.
I'm sure.
Hey everybody.
You're like Mr. Hanky the Christmas Pooh?
Sure.
You probably don't know that because that's a pop culture reference, right?
I think I do. That's South Park, right? Oh, I did it! I did it!
You got a pop culture reference. Yes. Boom.
I'm basically in the know now.
Yes, you are.
I'm hip with all the Gen. What's the new Gen?
Gen X? No, listen, I have no idea. You're like, you're a baby boomer. You're so old, though.
No, not quite.
Speaking of so old, this is our Guess the Game bit, where we're going to give each other vague, then specific, then super obvious clues from the Board Game Geek to guess a game and ask that you guess along.
Guess
ready?
What I have for you.
A game from 1936.
No.
I will. Yes, that's the purpose of this. I would like to try and guess what you have for me.
Okay. This game came out in 2015 and has a current rating of 5.9 with 854 ratings.
5.9?
Yeah.
Jeez.
I thought it was higher than this. Just because I see it on the social medias a lot. Plays 2 to 6 in 15 to 20 minutes and has a weight of 1.04.
Dixit? No, Mysterium?
No. No way. Mysterium would be higher than that, I would think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, keep going. I have no
idea. The category is action, dexterity. animals and children's games.
Animal pun animal?
No.
Okay. Hamster roll?
No.
Yeah, actual animals. Cake, go ahead.
I think you know this one. I feel like, I don't know, I just saw it. I was like, this looks like a Sean game.
Okay.
there's not a whole lot more to this
animals.
Game, Sean.
I'm trying to think animals. Dexterity animals.
The mechanisms are dice rolling.
What? But it's a dexterity game.
And there's a bit that stares at the dried fish hung high on the shelf.
Ice
drooling.
Cool?
Nope.
What?
No.
Oh my goodness, I have no clue. Okay, there's a bit that stares at fish?
At the dried fish hung high on the shelf, drooling.
I have no clue.
They're all attracted, wondering how they can reach the yummy fish beyond their leap.
It's not ice cool.
No.
You sure?
They come up with the idea of stacking on each other's back so as to grab the fish. Let's help them make a...
tower?
Of?
Fish?
No.
Sharks? Penguins? What eats
what
fish?
Animals like fish? What other animals like fish? On land.
Bird? No. Not birds. on land? Tiger? No. Tower of something.
Yeah. Tower's actually in the name.
Fit and something. I have no idea. I give up.
It's Cat Tower.
See, I've never actually played Cat Tower. My daughter just we have it, but I like my daughter just plays with the cats from it.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I've
they're
no,
pretty cute.
I know nothing about the game, just except that she has it and plays with it. So, yeah.
What a shame! This seemed like such a Sean game.
You're right. I know. I have contemplated getting another copy of it so I could actually play it, but no, whatever. It's fine.
Well, there you go. Shark Tower.
All right. I'm gonna keep things legit here. Actually.
Okay, that was legit.
I don't know.
This was my decision process. I was like, okay, I feel like I always pick games that I know and like, so I'm going to go to Sean's profile and pick a game he owns.
Ouch.
And here we are.
Ouch.
So look out. Next time it's just going to be beige and it's going to be a euro.
Ouch. Okay, speaking of bait, actually, no, not really. This game came out in 2004. It currently has a 7.9 rating on BGG with 55,000 ratings and 10,000 comments. People love to talk about this game. It plays 2 to 6 players in 120 minutes.
Power Grid.
Damn you. Have we asked each other this game before? You're right.
No, I'm just really
you're right.
Excellent at guessing games.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. I feel very good right now.
All right. Well.
Powerful, if you will.
Ouch. Oh, that's like a that. So the weight complexity on Power Grid is 3.27 out of 5. That was like 1.23 out of 5. Your comment there.
You know what's crazy though? Every time I guess the game really well, we usually lose our audio. So I'm like checking my audio.
No one knows. No one.
I swear. You know what? Power Grid is still a game I have not played.
Me either.
I purchased it because I felt like it was just one of those games that if I brought it up, it still didn't get played. So I was like, I'm going to own it so that I can, you know, bring it to the table.
Yeah.
And I think I've had it now for
a long time.
2 years, maybe.
I think I have not played Power Grid, but I understand you need to have the right group of people to play and enjoy Power Grid. Probably people that really enjoy the maths, as the kids say.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say, which I feel like I've probably mentioned on the show before, I'm always very enamored when there were things like conventions, the big conventions like Origins and Gen Con. There would always be like someone who sets up like these giant Games of Power grid that have like actual buildings that light up and like really cool, you know, like my Agricola game with the stuffies, like these giant games that people do. And I'm always enamored by it, but I don't think enough to play. I don't think I would do very good at Power Grid. I don't think I would enjoy myself.
I don't think I would do well at it, but I think I would enjoy it.
I never do really enjoy when I play math games, but I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
Like a hit and miss on auctions. I know it's a lot of auctioning too.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Speaking of power. Pew 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 pew. I was trying to say that in one breath.
Good job.
I'm out of breath now. And I'm going to get angry messages from my wife saying I was too loud and obnoxious. I know the way this goes. What? Why are we saying pew pew pew, Michelle?
I have no idea. I don't know what's going on right now. No. Yes, this is our bit wherein we explain games poorly and then tell you what we think of them after play or more using our super official scale of one.
That would be a hard no.
Two.
One. Meh.
Three.
I mean, it's fine, like Millionaire Movies or whatever it was.
No. Four.
Tis a gooder.
And five.
It's got the spark.
The spark.
The spark.
Hey!
That's impressive, too. And you got that R like in the middle of the word, too, and finished it off. Noish. Noish.
Very sparky.
Yeah, so sparky. Like Power Grid. Okay.
Boom.
Who's going first? You want to go? You want to go first?
Oh, boy. All right, sure. So my first pew-pew is Takenu, Obelisk of the Sun. And I'm waiting for BGG to load so that I can tell you it was published in 2020 and it has a current rating of 8.1 with 920 ratings, plays 1 to 4 players in 60 to 120 minutes, and has a weight of 3.94. Whoa. Designed by the amazing Danielle Tessini and David Terpsey. Oh my goodness. Art by Jacob Fachinowski, Michael Glugg. Sorry. Wow,
I'll try and make that sound present.
Zimniju Umgelter and Alexander Zawada. Sorry so much. Don't even know where to start with those names. And this is published by Board and Dice. Mm-hmm. This is a continuation in the classic, I guess. I'm calling it classic. T series being Teotihuacan, Zolkin, Trismegistus, I believe. So this is the next in that T series. So it's, if you're aware of those games, it's very much in line in terms of it being a heavy Euro. This game is very complex, so I'm going to try my best to describe it at a high level. But essentially, what you're doing is drafting dice to take actions to get points. So in that way, it's very much like many, many Euros that I enjoy. However, it's the intricacies, of course, that make this interesting. I would say the most unique element of this game is the central obelisk, which dominates like all social media posts. And the purpose of this obelisk is to represent shadow moving around the board onto the different dice. And the reason this matters is because, pardon me?
I said, oh.
Yeah. And the dice, depending on where they fall in the shadow and depending on their color, so there's a few different colors of dice, they'll be either pure, tainted, or... neutral. Mm-hmm. Tainted dice you cannot take. So if you really wanted to take this action and then the obelisk turns because you've done a turn and now suddenly some dice are no longer available.
Psych!
So that's kind of, yeah, I know. The other reason that matters is because on your player board, you have a scale, and on one side you have pure, and on the other side you have neutral. So when you take a die, if it's pure, you put it on your pure side. If it's neutral, you put it on your neutral side. And every four turns, you're going to have to balance your scales. And if you're imbalanced, you might lose points. Mm. And it also determines turn order. And there's ways that you can mitigate those scales. So, for example, you can get faith points, which are basically chits that count as plus ones. You can put them on to balance out your scale. There's ways to pay scribes, which are like, they remind me a lot of the workers in Castles of Burgundy. They can change the value of your die, or you can use them to take an action without having to put that die on your scale. Things like that. Of course, there's ways to mitigate it. So those are kind of like that's the most unique thing about it, right? Mm-hmm. This central obelisk that's moving around, the, you know, changing what dice you can draft and where they'll land on this personal scale of yours. The things that you're doing, there's a bunch of cards that you can draft. And those are, you know, like one-time use type of thing, end game scoring, and like ongoing modifiers to things that you can do. Mm-hmm. There's a building area where you can increase your production. So what's interesting, another kind of cool thing about this game is, like, there's obviously resources because it's a euro. And if you want resources, you can draft a die and then take the resources in that color. So, like, a black die produces black granite. And if it's a three, pip three, you get three granite. However, you have these production tracks, and they limit you in terms of how much you can actually produce. So if your production is at two, but you produce three, you get to keep two, but that third one doesn't just not happen. It actually goes into your scale and it screws with your balance. Oh, wow. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. You can build statues, which impacts scoring in some ways, or can impact actions in the sense of if someone takes an action, if you have a statue in that area, you might get a bonus. And then there's a temple where you build tiles with, and they're basically pillars, and then buildings around. They give you resources, they give you points. And it's kind of like, it reminds me a little bit of the temple, or the pyramid rather, from Teotihuacan. Like it's mm-hmm. the primary, I think, anyways, from my few plays, yep. It's the primary way to get points. So this obelisk keeps turning. Every two rounds it rotates, and you add more dice and shift the dice depending on how the shadow's falling on them. Every four turns you do the balancing and you change turn order, and then every eight you do a scoring where you score the various parts on the board, and then you do two full scoring, so I think it's 16 rounds, and a round being you doing one die, I think. Oh gosh. Yeah, so that's that. And of course there's lots of intricacies and lots of other things, but I'm not going to get into them. Yeah. So yeah. Oh, and I should mention this was a review copy, but I also purchased a copy. So I would have been talking about this anyways, I guess. I don't know. But anyways, let's start with the bits, as I always do. The bits are great. It's a huge board, like Teotihuacan, which is kind of nice because it has a really nice table presence. That being said, I feel like it could have been smaller. Like, it's just such a table hog. But it's pretty. And the board has all the information you could possibly want. Like, once you understand how things work, there's enough iconography on the board to aid you along, which is really nice. The obelisk is cool. It's a nice touch. It does get in the way a little bit because you cannot see the other side of it.
Yeah.
And when you're playing solo, you know, you don't have someone across the table to
move around,
do stuff. Yeah. So it's okay. But you know, if I was to not have it, I'd still choose to have it because it looks neat. Yeah. The rule book is good. Everything else is a fine quality. The bits are, the resources are just cardboard chits, which is a little bit too bad. Like, I'd love to see someone come out with some upgraded bits, like limestone, granite, bread. Yeah, it'd be kind of cool. But the player pieces are nice. The player board has holes for your tracks to put in, and, you know, the pillars are solid wood, and the buildings are wood as well. So, you know, nothing super special, but it has a nice presence. And the player colors are nice, too. There's purple and pink, Sean.
Whoa.
What? Yeah.
Whoa. And I mean, the blue's kind of more like aqua, or no.
Yeah,
like
it is.
Like a light blue, sky blue. Yeah.
Yeah, and then orange. It's nice. Nice. I like when games are like that. Yeah, so, and I mentioned the iconography. So the iconography is very, very good on the board and on the bits. Yeah, this is a really, really clever game. I find it very heavy. I find it heavier than Teotihuacan. Just, there's a lot to think through, a lot to think about. And because the board state changes fairly frequently, mm-hmm. you know, you do have to take that into consideration. Yeah. I love dice drafting, so, you know, it's no surprise that I would like this game. I really liked the balance and the whole balancing of the scales. And what I also really appreciate is it's not as punishing as I would initially have thought. Like, the first little bit that I played the game, I was like, oh gosh, my scale needs to be perfectly balanced, but it's actually like fairly forgiving. And you know, you can make decisions to say like, let's just go crazy this round and I'll just kind of deal with the consequences. Like, you might lose a few points, but it might be worth it. So I just appreciated that. Like, it's not so much that it doesn't matter. Like, it does need to be considered, but at the same time, it's like, not, you don't feel completely punished by it. Mm-hmm. Which is good because dice are random, right? So, yeah. The designer can't be like, well, I know, you know, there's always going to be this, but I guess probability. Anyways, the card play is also very good. Like, I find the cards are quite powerful. Like, they can give you, like, one card, for example, is a one-time use, but it's like, build this tile that's quite expensive for free, like just straight out for free. So pretty powerful cards. Interesting, like, I think you could really make some interesting combos. And the way the game's designed is you don't always have access to all the cards, so you kind of you have this little, it's called your happiness and your population, and you have to move those up in order to be able to access these cards and scoring cards. End game scoring cards, you start with one, but the other ones don't come out until your dude's pretty high up on that track. So it's kind of nice because, like, if you want to get those end game scoring cards, you do need to move up the track. They're not just going to hand those to you, you know, throughout the game, which I appreciated. Mm. Some other games do that, but, you know, I like that you had to kind of work for that. And yeah, the cards are good. Interesting. Yeah. It's a little bit of upkeep. Like, I was talking about, like, every two turns you move it and then you rebalance. And I find the balancing not overly intuitive. Like, you know, if you're in the dark shade, then black is pure and you know, white is not. So I there's some common sense to it, but it's not, I don't know. I didn't find that it became very second nature. I did feel like I was referencing the chart and making sure I had it right. And you're doing that constantly. And it kind of just felt like fiddly work, like administrative work. It wasn't like, ooh, you know, what's that going to be? And then I don't know. So that for me was the biggest detractor for the game. I know a lot of people, like with Teotihuacan, they said they didn't like the amount of like steps in a turn. You got to do this, and you got to do this, you got to do this. I didn't mind that. And then I know the opposite, like I think a lot of people prefer this one. But I actually felt that it was a bit fiddly in terms of the gameplay. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think I do enjoy the game. I want to keep playing it. I feel like there's a lot more for me to explore and understand with this game. And I think it's just a really strong, solid title. If beige, Euro, dice are your thing. And if you've enjoyed the T series, like hands down, you're going to like this one easily. So there you go. I know I talked a lot. There's a lot to talk about with this game. So thanks for your patience, Sean. But anyways, I'm giving this one a 4. Tis a gooder.
Tis a gooder?
Yeah, tis a gooder. For sure.
Well, you enjoy that. Actually, no. I probably, as much as I like obelisk, it might be something where I really did not enjoy my plays of Teotihuacan, my in-person plays, but when I played the digital implementation, I did enjoy it significantly more. Again, because, like, you know, stuff is handled for you, and it's just, So I think this might also be something like that, where I have no desire to play the board version of it, but I could see myself enjoying the digital implementation if it comes, which I'm assuming you probably will at some point.
Yeah,
a good digital implementation too, not one where you have to do all the work, one where the machine does all the work for you.
Yeah, that would be even worse, actually.
Would significantly. I'm sure there's tabletop simulator or tabletopia versions of this that don't have a script that probably aren't very good.
Yeah, I agree.
Cool. Well,
cool. Thanks.
You hit the heavy end. I'm gonna hit the very light end right now.
You're gonna bring the Sean.
Bring the Sean, and I'm gonna talk about some Rare Roses.
Ooh.
Which was a game that came out in 2019, designed by Rocky Heckman, with art by Leith Walton and Nene Thomas. The art in this, I'll say it right now before I get into it, is absolutely fantastic and gorgeous. But yeah, we'll get into that in a second. And published by Cravon Studios. This was also a review copy that was sent to us. This is a set collection game. Basically, it is a set collection game with a negotiation element. But what you are doing in this game is you're in a town of Bloomsville is what PGG says, but what you are is you're selling roses, and you're trying to fulfill orders.
Can I just jump in here?
Yes.
You're specifically, according to PGG, Floral frolicking.
So that's why when I just stumbled there, I got stuck on floral frolicking. And I was is that saying? And I had to, like, okay, Sean, your mind can't go anywhere. This is a family-friendly show. We're proud members of the Dice Tower. Watch what we say. But anyway, yes, you are, this is a town known for its rare rose shops, and you are basically a shopkeeper or someone who's selling roses, and you are trying to fulfill orders. There are a number of different roses in this game. I think there are 5 or 6 different types of roses, and there's going to be orders. These are your standard, board game orders. Like, you need three pink roses, 2 rainbow roses, and 1 black rose. Something like, you know, your typical how do you fulfill orders in a set collection order, quote unquote, game. And then you go through the turns. It's got a neat mechanism in that there are 3 different phases that the roses go through. So they start as buds, then they go to full flowers, they mature, I guess, bloom is what they do, and then they die off. So you need to use your roses, either your buds or your blooms, before they die off, and they're gonna go each turn, they're gonna kind of go one step further to the right, and you basically lose your stock if you don't do that. So that's a pretty neat thing. And when you're fulfilling orders, you're always you have the option of doing it where you could just use anything. So you can use all your, you can use, you know, what, as long as they're the right color, Or you can use the full order where it has to be exactly like three. It might be three blooms and two buds or something like that. And you get more money / points for doing that. Each turn, you're going to, there'll be roses at the market. You can actually pay more money to have more roses come out at the market. You can go get, you get those to add to your collect, I don't know what you call it as the head of a rose store in Bloomsville, but you get your roses for your inventory. That's the word I'm looking for your inventory, and you fulfill the orders. The one thing that really attracted me, about this game is it's got a very open, a completely open negotiating system. And I've seen a lot of, you know, people who've talked about this. There hasn't been a ton of buzz about it, but people have talked about, some people have had issues with it, in that the book basically says you can just negotiate however you want. So you can buy roses if what the market doesn't have, you can negotiate with someone else. Oh, I'll give you $15 for these two roses, for two red roses. Or, you know, I'll give you a rose, as they say in sports, a player to be named later. I'll give you a rose to be named later on. So there are no rules around the negotiation. And why I was interested in that is I'm a big fan of Chinatown, which is a pure, kind of pure negotiation game, right? You're just straight out negotiating for the tiles in the game. And I like the idea of having that open negotiation system, which was a neat thing. In terms of the, so I'll do what you did, because I think what trumps everything about this game is the art. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's kind of that, like, not watercolor so much, but that bright, vibrant style. And everything from the roses to the cards to the box to the back, like the back page of the rule book, is like this peacock with all the different roses on it and a water fountain, is absolutely stunning. Like, I think it's one of the most beautiful artistic games that I've seen. Quality component is pretty nice too. I think I'm not a huge fan of the money tokens, but everything else is really nice, really enjoyable for it. I really like it. In terms of the gameplay, that two on BGG is totally right in line. It's a very light set collection game. What makes it slightly quote-unquote heavier is that negotiation piece, and I think that negotiation piece is not for everyone. For instance, like, my wife did not enjoy this game because, that you know, you have to kind of really work hard at you know, you have to be mean sometimes when you're playing a negotiation game. So I know that's totally not for everyone. I think this game was considerably lighter than I was hoping for when I initially saw it. But it was still, it was an enjoyable experience. I don't think there's anything special about it, aside from the open negotiation. I feel like in the few games that I played, I feel like there is a bit of a runaway leader problem, that, like, once you get going, I think you can easily take off. And if you use your money, you can easily finish this game, I think, with 0 points. And I think there's a note in the adjust the rule book or in the rule book that you need to save your money, because money is points, and you could easily end the game with, like, 0 if you're too, not promiscuous is not the word I'm looking for, if you're too easy with your money.
frolicking
has just messed me up, man. But in terms of the overall rating, I'm going to say, I mean, it's fine. Yeah, there's nothing that really puts this game over the top. If you want a light, easy negotiation, like, if you're okay with that negotiation, you want a light, easy set collection game, it's an enjoyable game. But it's not, I mean, there are games that kind of do it better, right? If I'm looking for, like, a straight negotiation, I would play Chinatown over this. But it's very pretty. It's very, like, you can show it to, like, a friend who might really like flowers, or someone who really likes roses, and they'll really enjoy it. It's got some nice flavor text on the cards. Yeah, but in terms of gameplay, it's just kind of, I mean, it's fine. It's kind of right in the middle, I think. Yeah. That's Rare Roses from Craven Studios.
I like the, there's one card that's kind of funny. It's, yeah, the boss is turning 30. Okay, let's. So we want to get her some flowers before she's too old to remember us. 30, come on.
I do enjoy like that's the boss birthday one. I do really enjoy the flavor text on it, and like the first time I played it, I would like look through every card and I read, because I enjoy that type of thing. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my next one is,
and I'll just
also
say for the record, Michelle, that is a game that was not a gooder and did not have a spark for me. I'm just saying.
Let's definitely remember that.
Yeah.
What did you rate it? I think I
I mean it's fine. It's a 3. It's a 3. Yeah. I left the number off.
All right. Well, let's move on to Project L, which is actually lighter than Rare Roses at a weight of 1.71, believe it or not. Yeah. So this game was published in 2020, has a current rating of 7.7 with 359 ratings. Plays 1 to 4 players in 20 to 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. Designed by Michal Mikes, Jan Sukal, and Adam Spinell. Art by Yaroslav Yurika and Pavel Richter. And published by Board Cubator, which is an excellent, excellent name. And I believe this game was on Kickstarter. Project L is a polyomino game because it's 2020 and this world apparently needs more polyomino games. But this game is a beautiful polyomino game because it comes with acrylic Tetris shaped pieces.
They look and really many of pretty. Them
in bright, wonderful colors. And what you're doing in this game is completing puzzles by using your pieces, and the puzzles are double layered boards with inlay for the different shapes, and you choose how to put them in, and you're just trying to get the most points. And basically there's two different stacks of puzzles that are out, and once one stack is gone, the game is over. But what's very interesting about this game, I think, anyways, is it's an engine builder at the end of the day with your pieces. So on your turn, you get 3 actions. And with those actions, you can play a piece, grab a new puzzle, or upgrade a piece. And there's a chart basically showing the different levels of pieces. And you can swap same level, downgrade, or upgrade one, basically. And when you complete a puzzle, you get points, and I think you always get a piece, and maybe it's sometimes you get points. But anyways, you get new pieces by completing puzzles. And there's also once per turn, you can use an action to put a piece in every puzzle in front of you, and you're allowed 4 puzzles in front of you. But of course, the detriment is that you're spreading yourself rather thin, and you need to make sure that you can fill in the puzzles as required. You're filling in these pieces using polyominoes, but what it really boils down to is you're trying to be as efficient as possible. As you know, by getting the right pieces and filling in those puzzles as quickly as possible, that's where it really matters about this game. That's what makes it interesting. So there you go. That's how you play the game. The bits are insane. This game is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful production. You can tell that the publisher just put a lot of effort and time into this. It's a very, very sleek design. The box is completely black, and it has just an L in blue on it. The actual puzzles pieces, like I said, they're dual layer boards, and they've got a grid of like dots. And then the puzzle is cut out in white, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful. Lots of like black and white, sleek, clean, modern sort of look to it. And the pieces are great. They're really, really quite nice. Obviously they're acrylic and they're Tetris pieces, so that's fun. Yeah, so just a really gorgeous production. The rule book has like a texture to it. And again, it's just like black and sleek. Like just, yeah, very, very detailed and approach to the design. And it certainly paid off, in my opinion. I know, you know, art is subjective, but I do think it's quite a beautiful production. I really like this game. I was not expecting to like this game. I shouldn't say not expecting. I'm kind of burnt out a little bit on the whole concept of polyominoes, and I find a lot of polyomino games, while I quite enjoy them, I find they just kind of like, there's like kind of like a flow to them. You're just like, okay, like fit it in. Okay, that was nice. And then you move on. What I liked about this game is I did feel like it brought something different to the table in terms of it being like this race to being the most efficient. Like if you're just playing this game to like fill in the puzzle, it's actually just okay. But it's this whole idea of like really going head to head and being the most efficient at it. Again, this is a light game, but like just from that perspective of, yeah, just being really efficient. That's fun. That's the puzzle. And I really like that. That being said, I have played this with Chloe, who is my daughter and is 4, and she's not efficient by any means. But she can play it. And so if we've played it a few times fairly casually, so that's cool. I'm always happy when a game I get works for my daughter and for me. It's a good length. I find it usually ends quicker than I expect it to. Like there's only in a 2-player game, there's only 12 black puzzles, which are the more advanced ones. And it goes by rather quickly. So it certainly doesn't overstay its welcome. I would almost want it to last a little bit longer, but I'm sure they've play tested that. And maybe it just becomes a bit of a slog. It's certainly where it ends. I feel like it leaves you wanting more. I guess one of the complaints is the rule book includes rules for an expansion. I think that might have been a Kickstarter exclusive. So the retail edition has rules for something that's not in the box, which I don't think is that big of a deal, but it is certainly a miss. But yeah, if you really like Tetris and polyomino games, you will probably like this. And if you really like games that are pretty, you will really like this game. Yeah, it's fun. It's nice. I like it. If it was not as pretty, I don't know how I would feel about it. I imagine that would knock it down at least one grade. But yeah, as it stands, I was quite surprised by this, and it's fun. It's easy. It's fun. So I'm giving it a 4. 'Tis a gooder. And again, I should mention this was provided to us for review purposes. So cool. There you go. That's Project L. And I imagine it's been fulfilled because we got a copy, but I haven't seen it in retail yet. Yeah. Yeah. Neat little game. Oh, right. I still have one I wanted to quickly talk about. Right. Yeah, so this isn't even on BGG. So a sample was sent to us, and I was shocked that it wasn't on BGG. It was another. It's called Trapped, and it's escape room game pack, and we got the art heist one. But so this is like an actual escape room. So you like set it up in a room and make it like an escape room. So with this art heist one, you got like a bunch of pieces of art that you hung up, and there's like a art poster and all this neat stuff. And the back of the materials tell you where to put it, like hang this up on a wall, put this on a windowsill or whatever. And then you go through it like you would an escape room. And then to deal with hints, it's got a clue book. The really cool thing, and I think more board games should do this, where there's like a hint system or a don't read ahead, is they give you like this cardboard piece with, you know, punch outs, but they're like, you know, it consider a line. It's not a line. It's like up and then down and then up 3, you know, like that. So you'll say like, okay, I don't know what this is about. So, you know, it'll say, you'll flip over the piece and it'll say like hint 33. So you go and you put your little cardboard cutout on in the clue book on hint 33. And then it just reveals the text. But the genius thing about Genius, I mean, it's pretty simple, but what's great about it is that you can't, if you were to open the book, you can't read ahead. You don't know what any of it means. So there's no like, oops, I accidentally read that paragraph, or oops, right? There's none of that because of the way they did that. So I thought that was pretty nice. And it's nice that there's hints. Yeah, so that's it. You try to escape. And then there's like, based on how many hints you have and how long it took, you get a score they have on the back. There's different levels of puzzles. This one was a medium one, and it took, Rich and I just played it, and it took us about an hour. But obviously, what does it say? Eight players, I think, or six players. One of the things that I love about the board game hobby, and like one of the reasons I'm kind of cult of the new, is because I just love seeing some of the new ideas that come out and how some ideas evolve and stuff like that. And I just thought that this was a really cool, fun evolution of the escape room genre, just in the fact that it, you know, it actually felt more like an escape room. Like, you know, if you were having friends over, you totally could have set up like some hors d'oeuvres and some wine and set it up fancy, like an opening of the art gallery. Like that's how they make it. They set it up, but it's really simple and really easy to implement. There were like little name tags for everybody. Like just, yeah, well done, well thought out, really cute little package. I had a lot of fun with it. So that's cool. A Trapped series. It looks like it's available on Amazon. It's from the UK, but cool. I believe it's available on Amazon. So yeah, cool. It's neat.
Neat. Oh
yeah. This is the BGG thread spotlight, where we use people's comments on a BGG thread to make content for our show.
This one is like, again, I feel like all of these, Michelle knows me very well, or the fact that I'm just, you know, that we're similar, but like, you know, have you become jaded over time?
Who doesn't become jaded over time? That's my question.
That is a good point. I feel like almost everyone I know who's a gamer, even like people who I like got into the hobby and who haven't been playing for very long, are like super jaded already.
Well, Daniel Dukai, the OP, the original poster, said, "I played Twa today. Very highly rated game. Oh,
did I lose
went
you?
Through." Huh?
Hello. Hello?
Hi. Nope. You can't hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Sorry.
That's okay.
All right. Let's start with the Daniel Dukai thing again.
So Daniel Dukai, the original poster, said, "I played Twa today, which is a very highly rated game. Went through a learning match, then a proper two-player game with minor rule mistakes. I thought it was okay. Nothing mind-blowing. Nothing I haven't seen already. I also play video games. I have seen them from the 90s, and I think after a while games have started to repeat themselves. Nothing was new anymore. Have you become jaded?"
Well, I'm guessing that's Obi-Wana. I think so. When I first started getting into board games, every new mechanic that wasn't basically a roll and move got me extremely excited. Nowadays, I nitpick the hell out of games that I get, and it typically ends with me finding out that most games fall under what I consider run-of-the-mill.
Or a 3.
Yeah, or a 3,
which
yeah.
Apparently we actually don't give out that many 3s. The idea of our scale was to give out a lot of 3s.
But. Yes, and I mean, most games should be we've talked about this. If your game is a 3, it's in the upper echelon of games, according to BGG. So
that's true.
A 3 is fine.
Ian S. says, there's a good wide spectrum of games out there such that we can mitigate the risk of becoming jaded. That might mean mixing in games from outside our favorite sphere. I do also enjoy being a member of a couple of gaming groups where I regularly have different table companions, different people, different playing styles, and different conversations, all of which I believe help keep the gaming from becoming stale.
That's a really
good
point.
That's a lot of work, Ian, but kudos to you.
I think that's great. That's a great point. Like, yeah, that's helped me from having multiple groups. Well, before, in the before times, having multiple groups of people to play with has helped me a lot. Yeah, because I get like that with like TV shows and when I played video games and even books, like different books. Like, I get very like, oh, this is like so stale.
Yeah.
All right. Mario T. Lanza said, I've become a little jaded about the trajectory of Euros. The new school adds more and more interlocking parts. Euros branching away from German-style games, which are simpler and focus more on player interactions than mechanisms. I'd rather play the player than the game.
Yeah, that's well said, Mario. I mean, I do love modern Euros and interlocking parts, but there is certainly a beauty in the simplicity of like older Euros. And there are some Euros that come out now where it's just like, yeah, simple rules, simple to learn. And then as you play, the depth just comes out and from the folds, and it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jason says, no. There's always room. Simply, no. There's always room for a new game that's better than something I currently like or love. The main shift has been in having a better understanding of my preferences. Games have a higher threshold to be kept or played more than once, but I also enjoy new and varied experiences. I think both in video games and board games, we're still seeing new things. I think refinements and merging of styles is just as interesting as new genres. The only thing that's really changed over time is my willingness to play bad games or games I don't really enjoy. Yeah, I think that's pretty common.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty common experience. But yeah, if you really want something like super fresh, exciting, and new, then...
It's called Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And then you could convince yourself it's super fresh and new.
Fresh and new or just expensive?
Yeah, well, that's why you do the self-convincing.
All right.
Chapel or Chappelle, I find I miss games that used to exploit singular ideas. Today's games feel like designers took all of these great singular ideas and made a trifle out of them. Sure, like Joey from Friends used to say, what's not to like? Custard? Good. Jam? Good. Meat? Good. But really, it all tastes like feet.
Oh, he's so jaded.
Yeah.
Adam P. says, over time, I've discovered that games are defined by the company played with. Besides, there are too many games to care about all of them. That's yeah, true. Most board gamers do say that the part they like about the hobby is the people. You say that.
That's what I'm missing about gaming right now. Not that I don't love my wife, but I'm definitely missing the social interaction, and it's what I don't get a ton from... You know, it's nice to hear other people's voices, but from the digital gaming, I don't get that, like, face-to-face eye contact, like, you know, horrible BO. I'm not getting any of that.
Aw, so. Poor you.
I know. Chris K. says, I'm becoming jaded against learning new rules. Aw, man. I'd rather play the games I have or the few I was foolish to trade, sell away, and would like back.
Aw, man. Oh boy, have I repurchased games. My goodness. Mm-hmm. Yeah, learning new rules is definitely, it can definitely impact you, you know, after a while. And like you were saying, like when you're, you know, when you've got kids and your gaming starts at 8 o'clock and you're already tired, the idea of, you know, reading a rule book is a bit daunting.
That's, yeah, very much.
Yeah. All right, Jesse Ames says, when you've been submerged in any hobby long enough, you eventually reach a saturation point. You've seen and experienced the majority of what's available, and from then on, only something truly special will excite your senses.
Oh my gosh.
It's so true, though. It's very true. You may feel a sense of jadedness when you see less experienced consumers become excited about something you've already seen a dozen times before. You may be annoyed that they fail to realize that hot new idea was already been done years ago. You may find yourself wishing the medium's lowest common demographic would expand their tastes towards supporting evolution over regurgitation. You may shake your head disdainfully, retreating to revisit the classics you know represent the very best of the hobby. If this describes your plight, then rest easy in the company of us other miserable connoisseurs. Jesse, Jesse, well said, sir.
My eyes are tearing from Jesse.
Yeah, it's so true. I feel like that really, really captures the essence of the hobby. Yeah.
Let's see. The company of us miserable connoisseurs should be our show title. Hold on, I'm just bolding this to make sure. I'll do it after. Mark Wilson says, quite the opposite. I do find that the quote, "I've seen this all before," feeling described by the OP with some games. There are a lot of cookie-cutter designs out there, but I'm also better at sussing out why I like or dislike a particular game and what unique mechanisms or dynamics contribute to a game's fun. Collectively, it deepens my understanding of the hobby and my enjoyment of it, which is great.
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 So I could see that. I could see that. I feel like I don't feel like that, but I could see. I could see why that would happen. You know, there's like, yeah. I feel like something like that. I see a lot more in people who like really enjoy novels or really enjoy like books. You know, smart, learned people. Which I'm not saying that Mark Wilson isn't a smart, learned person or anything, but I see that. Yeah, I feel like I don't see that very often with board gamers.
Yeah, I wonder too, like, you know, he mentions, you know, sussing out what you like or dislike, and that came up a lot in this thread. Yeah. And I think that's like part of the problem in a sense. Like, it's good because it allows you to purchase and play games that are more likely to satisfy you. But I mean, if you really only like a very small percentage of like a specific genre, mm-hmm. then it's a lot harder to see something fresh and exciting. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I mean, if you're playing all the games, which would be exhausting in its own right, maybe you would see more stuff that's refreshing and exciting. But if you're maybe in your own bubble, like knowing exactly what you like, maybe it's harder to see. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with Jesse.
You just the
connoisseurs,
like
right?
The fancy words.
Yeah, and you see so much like on Reddit and on BGG where people are like, "Oh, you're early in the hobby." Like that's such a common feeling. Like it seems like there's this ebb and flow of emotions and procurement of games and discovering what you like and all of these things. That seems to be like a fairly consistent journey. For people in this hobby, you know what I mean?
Yep. I feel like I feel like almost everyone's gone through that.
Yeah.
That thing.
Sure.
Maybe people who've been around a lot, you know, before like Reddit or BGG, before that was like a real driving force in the hobby, maybe, or YouTube too. Before that, those were big things. I feel like maybe might not necessarily be to that point because they, I don't know, they're just old school. Maybe old school is better in this case. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I don't feel overly jaded. There are days where it's like, where you're not excited by the hobby. But I mean, in general, you know, I'm super excited to see and explore new ideas. I don't find I get as excited as I used to. Like, I do find that, yeah, you feel like, oh, I've seen this before. This isn't super new and exciting, but I still get really excited at the thought of finding something new and exciting, if you will. And I still like trying all the different games and seeing the ideas, exploring the thoughts. And of course, I love the art. I love the bits. I love all of that. So I get a lot of satisfaction from that aspect.
Does it have different minis? That's all we care about now.
That's right. So as long what as are the bits? Tell me about the bits. Is there a monkey with a banana?
Exactly. See, as long as that's bingo. No, I can't even remember. Bingo mungo. I don't remember what it was called. But as long as the bits are different, man, that's all we care about. We'll play the same game 10 million times. Buy it 10 million times. But if one bit is different, we can do it, because we're that superficial here on All the Bits.
That's right. We certainly are. No, we respect and appreciate art.
Art. Art and components and quality.
And board games are pieces of art. They really are.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Just like the back of that book from Rare Roses.
So, yeah. Yep. And the 30-year-old person who's apparently very old.
Maybe in Bloomsville, people don't last. They're too busy frolicking.
That's true.
Frolicking
ages you significantly.
Yeah.
Five years of frolicking is equal to 10 years of normal non-frolicking.
All right, this is going to go downhill fast. So let's wrap her up.
Before we close out the show, we just want to say thanks again to our amazing listeners for frolicking through the flowers with us, and our show sponsor, Board Game Bliss,
a store where you can find
so many good titles.
It's going to be the hardest part about editing this episode.
Our show sponsor, Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find an amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. The next time you're playing with someone who has AP, may we suggest you use that time to click the subscribe button and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Thanks again. Bye.
Bye.
Record.
Oh, that's a decent R roll.
It's a good roll.
Yeah.
I don't think I could incorporate it into like language though.
As you're talking.
Roll those dice.
Well, you're Canadian, so you should be able to do like, I can't even do it though. You would think as a speech therapist I could actually do that. I can't.
You would, and you speak French.
Yeah, you would really, yeah.
So you think you'd have some like little bit of a...
You would think I would be able to do anything at all.
Fail. Canadian fail.
Story of my life.